no, so yes, now we've started. Hey, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to This Is Gonna Be Good. I'm Carol Scudder.
And I am Quentin Lamar. We're here again.
Yeah, every show we like to start it in a little slightly different, weirdo way, like we just did. We're going to keep doing that.
And this one was being unprepared.
Well, we're pretending we're unprepared. I'm actually more prepared for this show than usual. Hopefully, I'm not going to undermine myself by that. You know what I mean? I don't want to jinx myself.
I hope not, because I am probably less prepared than you. And this is one of those like team efforts where I'm going to need to like piggyback on you. So
it only takes one of us to be prepared. That's why we work together.
That's true. It's very true.
So we should get started on our little conversation, because Justin Krebs is our guest. Mm-hmm. He's running for city council for District 39. That's in Brooklyn. Then we'll talk more about that in a minute, but he'll be here in about 20 minutes. So we have 20 minutes to talk, you and I. That's less than we usually have.
But we already, of course, started talking already, so.
And we did. You might get to reprise your math teacher story because I liked it, but for now, let's move on a little bit. All right. I don't know where you want to start. You want to start with Meghan Markle? You want to start with the relief bill? What do you want to start with?
I mean, well, I hear you have a story about Meghan Markle, so I definitely think that's somewhere we should start.
Yeah, it's not about her, because this topic is that Meghan Markle was accused of being a bully. I don't believe that. I don't believe she was a bully. I don't know, because I don't know her and I wasn't there and whatever. My story, and I'll try to make it quick. My friend got me a gig one night in a super fancy restaurant, like ridiculous, like the fanciest place I've ever been in my life. So fancy that it was horrible, actually.
That tracks.
It was just oppressive, like the most uptight place I've ever been. And I was supposed to do coat check. I happen to be kind of a coat check queen. I'm an amazing coat check person. I don't know if you knew that about me.
I did not know that about you. I've never given you my coat.
It's true. You've never given me your coat. No. I'm good at coat check. But that's when I get to design the system, because I did that a whole bunch with catering and party planning and stuff. But I didn't get to do that at this gig. I just had to walk in and be the coat check person in this super fancy restaurant. And they had a really horrible coat check system. Very convoluted, involving me standing at the door, taking somebody's coat and walking way far away, like down a stupid hallway into this closet to do the thing, and then bringing them back the number. It was just me walking back and forth like a long way, many, many times. And the snotty hostess said, and then when more people come, if you get really busy, you just stay there, stay in that closet, and we'll bring the coats to you. I'm like, okay. In my head, I'm like, this sounds like a horrible idea. But anyway, okay, so I'm going to do this. The place is so oppressive that you don't even feel like you can speak to anyone else around you. Like, I'm just standing there at this door, like rod straight. A friend of mine actually works at this restaurant that I didn't realize, and he sees me, recognizes me, he comes over. He stands next to me, both facing the same direction, and without hardly moving his mouth, he says, I can't really talk to you because we're not really allowed to talk to each other while we're at work, but I just wanted to say hi. It's good to see you.
Wow.
I got to go back to work. And it was like, oh, Jesus, this is awful. So I started doing my job, and at first it was sort of okay, and then it just got busier and busier, and it was insane, and I had to stay in the closet, and it turned into like Lucy and Ethel at the Chocolate Factory. Like, it was just completely out of control.
I get that reference.
Thank you. These snotty hostesses, there were three of them, were bringing me coats, sometimes stacks of coats that I had to somehow like sort out and stick a number on each one. I ran out of hangers, and they were supposed to bring me hangers and they never did. And I was stacking these coats up, and these girls were being really shitty. And then another girl, like a waitress, came to help us, and she said, all the hostesses are mad at you. I'm like, okay. I'll keep that in mind, but I can't deal with that right now. I felt like I was about to have a heart attack, and it went on for hours and hours, and finally it was over. I made $675 cash this night.
For coat check.
$675.
That's great.
I almost had an aneurysm. It was horrible. I had to tip out the hostesses, and then I got a call the next day saying, we don't need you anymore, thanks.
Mm.
So, okay. The reason I think this has to do with Meghan Markle is because...
I forgot that's what we were talking about.
Yeah, is because I'm assuming that the atmosphere at the castle or whatever, at wherever they live, where do they live? Buckingham Palace.
The castle.
Is oppressive in the way that this restaurant was, that there's all these rules and protocol and that everybody's just like, you know, on a razor's edge all the time. And maybe she just, I don't know, like didn't behave. Maybe she didn't follow all the protocol. I heard one of the complaints was that she sent some 5 a.m. emails.
That's one. And then I read one where she kind of flipped out when she got all those free designer labels sent to her, and the protocol for the royals is that they send that stuff back. And she thought that was ridiculous. I also found that ridiculous. You're expecting her to turn down free designer swag, which is the most anti-American thing ever. She is an American. And I feel like there was a lot of disconnect between those two things.
It just seems like a wildly overreaction. I mean, did she kick a corgi or something? Like, what the hell? Like,
it's very weird, especially since she's pregnant. So it's like you're attacking this pregnant woman. I mean, I've never been a fan of the queen. She passed the mic a long time ago.
I'm kind of a fan, and it doesn't make any sense at all. And I realize that. But I actually don't think the royal family should exist at all either.
No.
It doesn't make any sense.
I think we as a world need to move forward from white people having all that privilege just because they were born white.
Just because they were born.
I can't get down with that.
Not even just born white. They were born into this royal family. And there you go. Now you're royal. That doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, when you make sure that the only people that could be born into that are white, then it is the same thing.
Oh, for sure.
It's definitely that.
Yeah, there's a racist element to it as well. Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
The whole thing is just ridiculous. Just like that restaurant was ridiculous too. I also don't think that restaurant should exist.
It's just for the sake of being, you know, oh, we're this, we're that. That's all I have to say about that Meghan Markle thing. It's complete BS.
Yeah.
And fuck the queen, quite frankly. Fuck her.
Oh, I still
she has other things to worry about. She should be worried about her husband. She needs to leave people alone.
Well, and no, but the overarching story, they need to be focusing on Prince Andrew and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein.
That part.
Why on earth are they treating this Meghan Markle thing like it's some freaking giant story? I mean, yes, I'm going to watch the Oprah interview tonight. We're happening to be recording this before the Oprah interview. And by the time this airs, it'll be a week at least or two after that interview has aired. So perhaps some more information would have come out, but the focus needs to be Prince Andrew and also phasing out the royal family.
I agree with that.
Phase it out. I'm glad I got that out of the way. Yeah.
In American news, Dr. Seuss got canceled this week.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
I'm sorry.
It's ridiculous.
I enjoyed to say that.
That is the most ridiculous.
Dr. Seuss got canceled by a bunch of rabid, drooling mouth liberals like you and me who wanted to get rid of everything that has to do with American values and what's important to our children. We are just terrible people. It doesn't matter that the company itself decided to change on its own accord.
His family, his freaking family requested that 6 books go out of print. 6 books, the most obscure of them, Green Eggs and Balaam.
Ham.
Green Eggs and Ham was not one of the books. It was like whatever happened over on Market Street or whatever it was, Mulberry.
Yeah, I think it's Mulberry Street.
Something about the zoo. I don't know. And I'm sure they're fine. They're fine books, but they've got a little racist imagery in them.
They do. House Republican Kevin McCarthy read Green Eggs and Ham on social media.
He did.
And people criticized him.
Wait, Ted Cruz read it on the floor during a filibuster.
Kevin McCarthy also read it.
Oh, good Lord.
I saw a video of it. And
recently.
I'm just happy to see the Republicans are reading because I don't. I think that's something.
Yeah.
You know, like with McCarthy, it took 56 years, but the man finally read a book.
They are much more likely to burn a book
than to read one.
And that's the thing. They don't really give a rat's ass about these books.
They don't.
It's the culture war.
I feel like maybe it affected them because we finally, like, cancel culture's coming for books within their, like, reading range.
That's a good one, too. I like it.
Maybe that's what it was. I don't know.
They're full of Green Eggs and Ham. That's ridiculous.
Patooey, bologna.
They're full of hooey and bologna. Also shit.
They want to do everything but govern. They want to do everything but their job. It's so amazing.
That's the thing. It's a big old distraction. Their so-called COVID relief plan, the one they put forward, was puny and ridiculous. They've literally never put forward a health care plan.
No. They have not.
Except they oppose Hillary's, which is basically the one Barack Obama ended up adopting to some degree. And then that they opposed it because it was his, whatever. So
because it was his. Because he was Meghan Markle. So
yeah, exactly. Because he was Meghan Markle.
It's a bunch of BS. Nobody cares.
Though the Queen loved him, by the way. But anyway, what else happened?
Over 90 million people have been vaccinated in the U.S. so far.
Not me.
I have been.
I know. I'm excited for you.
I walked in there and I was like, I'm a bartender. Give me a shot.
I just found out I qualified also because I did catering last year.
So there you go.
Well, I've been trying to make an appointment and I can't get an appointment.
I'm like, please vaccinate me so people can yell at me and ask me to make drinks. And, you know, because my favorite part is having a crowded bar and somebody gets me to try to recreate a drink they had at one of their friends' wedding last year.
Oh, no.
That's my favorite part of working in the service industry. Can't wait to get back to it. So vaccinate me. Give me back out there. Let me get you drunk.
That's the other thing I thought of with the Meghan Markle situation. Because I catered and did food service and chef work as well in New York City for 20 plus years, I've worked in a bunch of rich people's houses. I've been the help, basically, in a million people's houses. And some of them are shitty, all right? And I don't get that vibe from Meghan Markle that she's a shitty person like that.
Wow. I mean, like, she clearly is shitty adjacent. Her father's side of the family is very, well, very much a problem. I don't think that's her fault or it affects on her.
No, he's not great.
She seems to have a lot of shitty people around her. And she's doing fine. You know, she's having this baby. They have a great thing going. She's married to one of the hottest redheads on the planet. She's okay.
He's adorable. She is fine. And it's not that important a story. That's the thing. We probably shouldn't even talked about it, but I had to get that Kovchak story out.
I'm like, she's pregnant. Like, you could have at least waited to do the inquiry after she had the baby.
Well, then
she still would have been called a monster for doing it for a woman who just had a baby, but that's better than doing it to a pregnant woman.
Huh? Yeah, I agree. But, and also, this happened in 2018.
Yeah.
These allegations. Like,
why now?
What's this year? Is this 2021?
2021, supposedly.
That's what
Meghan says, it's because we're totally backtracking here. But Meghan,
we weren't done.
Meghan's saying that it's because it's like to get in front of the Oprah interview.
It's not important, but I cannot stop talking about it. Okay. Also, Texas.
The royal family in a nutshell.
Texas, exactly. And I like a corgi. I do like a corgi. All right. Texas. Corgis. You hate corgis? No, you can't hate corgis.
I do.
They're adorable. I'm going to send you. I got to send you an Instagram about this corgi that I really love, and he's adorable.
Please don't.
I think I will, though.
I had a bad corgi experience as a kid. I don't like them.
But you did? Do
you
tell.
Go ahead.
Is it too long a story?
It's not long. It's just like I used to walk to school every day as a kid in elementary school, and I used to walk by this old lady's house who had, because I used to walk the side street. So like basically in my neighborhood, like the side streets would be like people's backyards, because some people had backyards that like went on to the side of the streets. So you'd be walking past basically backyards.
Uh-huh.
And there was this one corgi that would give me shit every single day. That thing would bark at me and chase me. And like the backyards are huge. So like it would chase me for at least 20 feet at least.
Aww.
And I just hated it. And
aww,
it was old, and it just seemed racist to me. It just seemed like an old gray racist dog. I just didn't like it.
Hashtag not all corgis. Come on.
I'm sure, but I don't, you know, I'm a big dog person. You know, give me a German Shepherd, a Great Dane, a Saint Bernard. You know, I like a big dumb dog.
Oh, you mean you like large format dogs? I thought you meant I'm a big dog person. Like, I love dogs, but you mean you like large format?
Oh, I do love dogs, but you're large.
You're a large format dog person.
Yeah. Okay. I'm a large person, so I need a large dog. I'm like 6'4", 280 pounds. I need a real dog. I'll step on a corgi and kill it.
You are prime real estate. For sure. What do we think about Texas and Mississippi? And now Alabama's right around the corner about to drop their mask mandates.
Texas is doing everything.
Texas already did it, actually.
They're doing everything in their power to become the underworld. They just
apparently
they want everybody there dead. They don't want to govern. They want no power. I read that they're not gonna fix the power structure there.
They're going to keep it the same.
So that they're going to keep it the same. And they're going to we're just going to work on global warming so much that a snowstorm like that will never come back again.
But that's actually part of global warming is what happened to them.
They don't know that, Carol. They don't understand that.
I know, but people have said it enough that maybe somebody might have said it walking by them that they could have heard. It's also written down in words on science websites and stuff.
They don't read that. They only read children's books. Carol,
that's right. I'm out of touch. with what
they're immune to facts and logic. You know
what they're doing in Texas. I guess you're right. It's just super sad to me. I don't know.
It is sad.
It's just dumb. Dumb as rocks.
You know, the gerrymandering there has to stop because people, most of the people in Texas don't want that. They don't want Abbott.
I agree.
They don't want any of that. So that has to change. And until they change, Texas won't change. Mississippi, yeah. Well, what can I say about Mississippi?
Well, Mississippi. But once again, like, that's got to be gerrymandering too. I don't know. I mean, my friend, you know, our guest, Erin, lives there right now. I should ask her about that because I think Democrats should be able to win Mississippi if it was.
Mississippi.
Not rigged.
Is what the third, it has the third highest population of black people.
Yeah.
It's a huge, so of course, wherever you find a bunch of black people, you're going to find gerrymandering.
And Stacey Abrams and company was saying that Mississippi could be the next Georgia as far as turning that state around. Yeah.
It should be. And the Republicans will do everything in their power to keep that from happening.
And we know that this week, day before yesterday, was it? The COVID relief bill finally passed, for God's sakes. But
zero Republican support.
Zero Republican supported that. And they got the thing to raise the minimum wage kicked off yet again. And 8 Democrats joined them on that. What the hell? Quinn?
I don't know. I didn't really have a lot of hope in the minimum wage thing when it was something that Bernie Sanders was championing. No offense, but Bernie Sanders does not really have a history of getting things done.
Please don't blame Bernie Sanders on this.
Only blaming Bernie Sanders, but I kind of, I don't know, like I feel...
You can't at all blame Bernie Sanders. No.
This is a prime example of Democrats not coming together the way they should and voting against their constituents. It's another example of that.
That ain't got nothing to do with Bernie Sanders, though. That has to do, this has been a long running thing. They should have raised the minimum wage 5 years ago, if not more. They've waited so long, it should be 18 by now, not 15.
It should be 21 if we're going to be honest.
Okay, fine. 21. But, sold. Let's do it. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. And this is what I thought of today. It's like America hates poor people, but we can't stop trying to create more poor people.
Well, this country was founded on people working for free. Like America would not be what it was. The people could, free labor is what America constantly needs to try to find some way to perpetuate and go back to, because that is the original business model. So
once again, that's why the so-called right to work states, you know about that, right? Do you know what a right to work state is?
That's not a right I have.
That is a state. That's a state. Like, I'm from a right to work state. That means you have a right to work for less money. You do not have a right to form a union, basically.
That's
some bullshit. Well, and that's true with most of the South.
Of course.
And that they call it right to work is craven and disgusting. And
it's Jim Crow too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's insane.
Slavery too. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find that in a lot of states that have a lot of black people in them.
Hi, Justin.
Hello.
Hi there. Hi. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
We're good.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. It's so nice to meet you.
You as well. Where are you two located right now?
I'm in Sunnyside, Queens.
And I am in Brooklyn.
Where in Brooklyn are you, Quentin?
I'm on the border of Bed-Stuy and Crown Heights.
Excellent. Okay.
Is that Crown
Sty? So not far from you.
Crown Sty?
Yeah. Crown Sty. I like that.
I like Crown Sty. Okay. Good. Cool.
So yeah, we're definitely neighbors, I believe, Justin.
I'm on the other side of the park. I'm in Park Slope.
Right.
Corner of Park Slope and Park Slope. So
you're running for city council for, is it the 39th district?
You got it.
And that is Park Slope, Kensington, Windsor Terrace. What else?
The southern part of Gowanus.
Okay,
the western parts of Carroll Gardens and Cobble Hill, the Columbia Waterfront District part of Red Hook, and a sliver of Borough Park.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
So
that's
kind of follows the F line down.
Okay, cool. That's a good way to think about it.
Yes.
All right.
So,
well, go ahead.
Well, I guess I'll go first. Justin, so why don't you tell us about yourself, please?
Sure. So thank you for having me. My name is Justin.
Of course.
I'm running for city council. I'm a 20-year progressive political organizer. on local, state, national campaigns. For the last 6 years, I've run the national campaigns team at moveon.org. So working on a range of issues. You've received and deleted our emails many times over those years.
Absolutely.
And donated.
I appreciate that. Email still works. So I kind of act as the air traffic controller among a team of campaign directors there, whether we're working on healthcare, taxes, immigration, the recent COVID relief bill, climate, reproductive justice, gun violence, impeachment. And that's where I do a lot of my national work, a lot of my big organizing. And prior to that, though, I did a lot of progressive institution building and community building and organizing around local issues, parks, playgrounds, arts and culture, open spaces, civic engagement, and writing about politics. And it's these various threads of political organizing that have been my professional work while also being a parent, advocate, and leader. I have 3 kids in the local public school system.
Right.
And working on other community events, from supporting small businesses to helping with the food pantry over the last 9 months, and that a national and local currents pulling together into this campaign.
You're busy.
That's a lot on your plate.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Like, you know, speaking about Move On, like I have, you know, of course I support Move On, and you've done some great work, especially during the Trump campaign, which thankfully we made it through.
Yeah.
I'm a great supporter and thankful for all the work that you've done. But now, you know, shift into this race, like, you know, why do you want this job?
Great question. So I've, as I said, for the last 6 years, I've been doing the national work at Move On. And four of those years during the Trump administration. But throughout my last 20 years of doing progressive political organizing, and even through these years while I've been at Move On, there's been a strong current of my work that has to do with building social capital and building community around what's closest. My history before and around Move On has been working with parent leaders in our schools, working on open space issues. I'm the founder of a national network of political social clubs known as Living Liberally, best known for Drinking Liberally Happy Hours, where people get together in person and talk politics and laugh.
Oh my God, I can't wait to go have drinks with people and talk about politics in person, because those are my favorite things there.
And throughout a lot of my work, there's the sense of how do you connect with folks around you to build social capital, invest in community, and show that we can accomplish bigger things together than when we're apart. That has played out really well and excitingly in my work at Move On, but it's really the work of doing this in person and face to face is exciting to me. And this was even before the pandemic that I was getting into this race with my kids in the school for the first time, all 3 kids in public school, my wife having a small business in the neighborhood. It became clear that this is our home, and investing some of that big organizing energy and that long-time commitment to social capital together into local government would be an exciting opportunity.
Oh, very cool. That makes a lot of sense.
Very cool. My next question would be, what are the biggest challenges facing the district, and what are your plans?
So I think the challenges that face the 39th district aren't that dissimilar from challenges that face the whole city. When I look at the district, the first thing that comes to my mind is schools. So I have an 8.5-year-old and I have twin 6.5-year-olds.
Right.
You said I have my hands full. That was even before you knew I was a parent of multiple.
Well, no, I knew you were a parent because I read a couple of your op-eds earlier, and I was going to say one of the things we wanted to focus on the most was schools. Yeah, I mean, talking about schools was one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about the most, though Quentin and I do not have children. It's still, I know people that have children, I have friends that have children, and I have friends that are teachers as well. So, you know, this is one of the most important things facing us right now with the pandemic. That and live performance, if we can somehow get to both those things in this, that's going to be... We'll be winning, but
you're talking about 2 areas of life in the city that are near and dear to my heart. On schools, I have, again, 3 kids in elementary school. My lens tends to be to look through elementary school, but obviously this affects middle and high school.
Yeah,
I think that it's important to recognize that what's happening at our schools, while it obviously affects our kids, our teachers, our parents, our guardians, our caregivers, it affects everyone in the city. The city is
absolutely.
We have 1.1 million students in New York City's public schools. So that's 1 out of every 300 Americans in the country is a student in a public school system.
Oh my goodness.
So figuring out how to invest in it, prioritize it, get it right has huge, huge stakes.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, some people talk about schools because they're running for city council. I'm running for city council because I talk about schools all the time.
Right.
The district-wide president's council of parent leaders from around the district. And right now, I think our focus is on how do you get the safe, equitable, full-time in-person reopening back in the fall.
Yeah.
Our teachers are working tremendously hard trying to make remote and hybrid in-person work. Administrators are running multiple programs at once. But we need to get it safe, equitable, expected, resourced, prioritized for kids to be back in person. That's going to be what's going to work. So that's one of the topics that I talk about the most.
Yeah.
And again, I think that reflects both in the 39th and citywide. And then another area that I'm really, I think affects the 39th district a lot, but I think is not unique to the 39th district, is how we as a city support and breathe life into and bolster our main streets. And when I say our main streets, I mean wherever you live, whether you're in Sunnyside or you're in Bed-Stuy, you're in Park Slope, you know what your main street is. It's the heart of your neighborhood.
Yeah.
How do we make sure our small businesses are alive? They've been hit hard by the pandemic. They were already hit hard before that by
Absolutely.
The monopoly practices of Amazon.
Absolutely.
How do we make sure there's green space, open space, space for arts and culture and live performance, space for cyclists and strollers and seniors, and all of that is a lot of cities are based around neighborhoods, but New York is even more so. Mm-hmm. We all make the deal. We'll live in a smaller home because the city is our living room. The city is our extra space.
Yeah.
Make sure that main streets are thriving.
For sure. Yeah. All of the above. Now, I had a conversation earlier sort of to prepare for this interview with a friend of mine who is a seventh grade math teacher at a junior high school, public school in Brooklyn. He's really, I had actually not spoken to him since the pandemic started. I knew what he was doing and sort of followed him on Facebook, but you know, he was talking about the challenges of the remote learning and how much he misses being in the classroom. And he's there twice a week, I think he said, and I can't remember how long that's been going on, but twice a week he got to go back. Recently he had to stay home because a kid tested positive. I don't think it was even in his class. It was like in the school or something, and maybe it was in his class. But anyway, he felt like he actually shouldn't have to stay home because he's vaccinated. He actually has antibodies. Like, he's really not at risk. And the kids who, he said that when kids are in person, it's still only about 10 or 12 kids because most parents are still keeping their kids at home. So it's almost an ideal teaching situation because it's a smaller class and he gets to be there with them. And, you know, it's just kind of killing him to have that taken away.
The fact that the kids who are going in person are getting these small group, small cohort experience with teachers is incredible. You could build a system, you'd want to figure out how to do that more regularly. You would just want to do it for all the kids.
And yeah, for sure.
What you're saying is what I'm hearing from teachers again and again. They've worked really hard to make it work this year and last year.
Yeah. They have.
But they want to do what they do best. And they know that what they do best is not in the little boxes on Google Meet or Zoom. It's in a classroom. It's where they can connect with the students and also where you help the students learn in an environment where you can take away some of the other externalities. You don't know what the students have going on at home, how many siblings, what other noise, what other distractions. And you know what it's like. We're all working from home. We know that parts of work when there's also dishes and the doorbell and whatever other problems there are in your life.
Absolutely.
Go in, as do our teachers.
Yeah, for sure. And he said, and this is one question for you, is he said, I feel like everybody's just winging it. And I want to know that there's a plan, you know. So my question for you is, do you think we're any closer to a plan? Does anybody have a plan?
I think we are.
For reopening the schools and for getting kids back in person. Sorry.
I think we're closer to a pledge to have a promise, to have a process to make a plan. I don't think we have a plan yet.
Lordy. All right.
It alarms me. So I'm very encouraged to hear Mayor de Blasio say, we're going back in the fall. I'm very encouraged to hear the new chancellor, her responsibility is to get us back in the fall.
Okay.
But just say the gap between what is being said and actually having us there in a way that is safe, that's equitable, that families of color around the city, many of whom have have gone back at much lower levels, that teachers around the city who have real safety concerns, that all of them feel confident in coming back, that's the work that still needs to be done. And that cannot be the mayor saying, we are going to have a plan in June. It has to be saying, here's what we're hearing about the concerns. Here's how we're taking safety seriously. And some of it is straightforward. Teachers should all be vaccinated. And,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
I believe that we're well into that process. I actually spoke to a teacher today who has not been vaccinated yet. She was describing some of the problems. I think we're getting better at that. Teachers need to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
I think by the fall, parents and grandparents and caregivers, guardians are going to be vaccinated.
I hope so. And so
with that done, I think that's a long way of the way there, but there will need to be some other changes. And just clarity of what the expectations are is going to go a long way. But that planning and getting those stakeholders together and making it clear that it's not parents versus teachers or students versus the city leadership. We all kind of want the same thing here.
Yeah.
Now let's describe it and mobilize every resource we can to making it happen.
Yeah. He said, if I could have my ideal, my dream, I would actually choose the students that I wanted back in person, because he feels like there are some people, some students that are falling through the cracks. You know, the student who asks him for extra help is not necessarily the one who really needs the extra help. Mm. And it's harder for him to, you know, see or have access to those students because they're virtual. You know, Now he knows that he couldn't do that and that actually the parents have to be involved as well. But he's like, you know, I have an idea in my mind of some children that I really wish I could just have back in this class, even if it was only twice a week, because I know I could reach them better.
The things that teachers know are incredible. They're professionals. Yeah. They're trained and they figure this out. Yeah. You know, I have two first graders, and one of my first grade teachers said, you know, they reached out and said, I know some of the kids need some extra attention with reading. And probably this year, every kid needs extra attention with reading. But she reached out to us and said that. And she set up an additional small group time for a group of kids she'd identified, including one of our daughters, that she's now making time in her schedule to do.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm the parent. I'm with them all the time. I am not a professional to know that. How do I support them in reading different than what I'm doing? I'm so grateful that this teacher saw that. And I think of your friend. Your friend knows which kids are falling through the cracks a little bit.
He does.
And if they can be in person, he or she can grab them tight. If not physically, virtually, you know, metaphorically.
Yeah.
Give them the attention they need. And students across the system are in desperate need of that. And we just, let teachers do what they do best.
Yeah.
In a way that is safe and clear and does not create fake tensions among the different stakeholders in our city.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. I know my sister, who has two children, one in seventh grade, one in first grade, she doesn't live here. She lives out of state of Michigan, but she's a parent who's like very frustrated with not having, you know, my niece and nephew in school full time. And she says she feels like helpless because she doesn't know what she can do. Like, nobody's given her any idea of when this could happen. She doesn't want to face another school year of her children not being there. And I imagine there's a lot of parents in New York that feel the same way. A helplessness about it.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, in the fall, as we're coming back to the school year, one of the things that I realized, and again, my kids are elementary, but I realized if they get nothing else this year, I want to make sure that they're really developing their reading skills. Now, we have plenty of books at home. We're lucky that we read aloud a lot. But beyond that, I'm not a literacy educator. So I organized an online workshop for parents with a literacy educator with a theme of how do you support literacy at home, but with added in a really specific adjective. How do you support joyful literacy at home? How do you make it that it's not, as a parent, that you're now getting into conflict with your kids because you're like, well, I'm teaching you to read and you're going to enjoy it. No, you don't want to have that fight. How do you keep it in a joyful way? And that's, I think, a lot of parents are scared about. They're like, we're not trained to be teachers.
Right.
And we don't want to make everything a confrontation, but we also want to make sure. So it was a great workshop to be able to do that. And I do think the parents need and deserve a lot of support this year. And I think that the best support that we can all get for everybody is have a clear plan. You know, and there's some folks that think that we should get back to school April 1 or May 1.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
If that were possible, I mean, I would do whatever. I'll join whatever meetings and committees I can to help make that possible. But really, I do think that if we were to say in the fall, we're back in person, but hey, we need to do A, B, and C to get there. Mm-hmm. Now let's actually as a city do that. I think that would be the kind of roadmap we need. Again, great that we have a pledge, but it's a pledge for a promise, for a process, for a procedure to eventually have a plan to return, and we need to do a little better than that.
It's like we say in the South, I'm thinking about getting ready to think about going outside. Like, so funny. They always add all these, like, I'm getting ready to think about getting ready. Yeah, anyway.
We're in the South.
I'm from North Carolina.
Right.
But I've lived here for 30 years, so I like to pretend I'm a New Yorker, but I still have a little tad of an accent.
No, it's definitely there. It comes out.
Especially when I want to tell my little stories about, like, in the South, we do this. Anyway, Quentin, did you have another question?
Well, sure. Like, shifting back to your campaign a little bit,
yeah.
My question would be, what would you say differentiates you from the incumbent?
Sure. So I should say, so the incumbent, Brad Lander, he's term limited out. He's been in for 12 years. He's running for citywide office for controller.
Well, that's one thing that differentiates you then.
True.
We're not running for the same seat.
Right.
I think he's been a terrific city council member overall. And there are ways that he's tackled city council that I really respect, which is understanding that there are a couple roles to city council. There is the legislation you pass. You know, you have laws, you have this very specific roles, budget, oversight, and I think he's done a lot of good work there. But I also think he's done a lot of work showing that there's this kind of soft power to city council. Mm-hmm. It's not only the laws you pass, but it's how you act as an ally to community advocacy groups and how you act as a champion for issues. So work that he's done to help along the middle school integration plan in District 15. District 15 is the school district that overlaps with the 39th council district. He never voted to make that happen, but he helped act as a convener and a champion and supporter of the groups that were making it happen, or his focus on safe streets. He's had some work that he's done with legislation he's passed, but other work that he's done, again, advocating, convening, and shining a spotlight on the need for more bike lanes, the need for more accountability around crashes, the need for more supports for street safety. So mm-hmm. I think he's done a really good job with that. And then I think there's a third part, which is a council member is just kind of a celebrator and consoler in chief, like a little bit of a mascot for the community, but you know, you want to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think he's done all those things well. So that's not how I differentiate from him. Those are places I think he's done good work.
Right.
And help map out really, really big shoes to fill in this district.
Oh, cool.
I'll leave it there. I'm happy to continue talking about differences as well.
It just sounds more like you like what he did and want to take those things further, bringing what you bring to the package as well, to the job, you know, your interests. I was thinking back on the op-ed that I read about education that you wrote. Mm-hmm. One of the sort of compelling things you said was, and I didn't think about it this way because I don't have kids, that we've had 2 years of schools being disrupted. Let's not have a third. And that's what it would be if the fall season is disrupted. That would be right. A third year. And I wouldn't have even thought of it that way. And right. The other thing in the article that you wrote, in Gotham about the arts, where you were sort of talking about the theater stuff, talking about bringing theater artists into schools to help enable the cohort learning thing. That's what I got from that. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, like, yeah.
I thought that was a great crossover to help get artists some work.
It absolutely is. You know, last summer, when we weren't sure what was going to happen in the school year, part of what I was seeing is like, well, if you could only have small groups together, now, the limit is going to be physical space and teachers.
Right.
Well, physical space, I think we could have solved as a city. We decided to. There's no shortage of empty retail, empty restaurants, empty storefronts, empty offices, empty college campuses. If we had said...
And theaters.
We could have turned... We could have transformed places into more classrooms.
Yeah.
And then if we had said, well, we only have room for 8 or 10 kids in a classroom at a time, well, make 2 or 3 times as many classrooms. Then you would have needed two or three times as many teachers. Yeah. But what if you had, and this is something that would have required federal funding, which is now coming, and state buy-in, not just the city, imagine the WPA, imagine the New Deal for our students, in which we said there are not hundreds, thousands or tens of thousands of unemployed and underemployed artists, creatives, folks that want to be working that can't go to their jobs right now. What could a program have looked like that would have trained them as a surge corps of teaching assistants or teaching fellows or whatever the right program would have been?
Right.
I'm not saying that they would be as skilled as their professionals in teaching the new math style to my first graders, but could they supervise a group of 8 kids in doing creative activity, creative plays, social emotional learning? Probably, you know, if they were paired with a professional teacher, a senior teacher.
Yeah.
That kind of creative thinking on a large scale wasn't happening. And sadly, what I think did happen is families that are more privileged and have means figured out that they could hire somebody to be a babysitter or a pod leader, basically be a teaching assistant for the days that their kids weren't in school. And families that couldn't either afford it or couldn't, for health reasons, maybe figure out or find the pod, didn't have that. But wouldn't that have been amazing if it could have been artists, but it could also be restaurant workers. I mean, hospitality workers. There's so many folks who actually, as part of their job, are good at smiling and communicating and engaging. And said, let's come up with a way that a couple times a week, you're with a group of students. And sure, there would have been insurance questions and training questions and health questions. We would have tackled it all.
Yeah.
If there had been that sense like that, we needed a Marshall Plan for our kids.
Background investigation.
That's a great and innovative idea. As a social worker turned comedian actor, I would have definitely been down to do something like that. It never even occurred to me. Of course, I'm not the person, I guess, would come up with that. But yeah, that is like the kind of outside of the box thinking that really would have made the difference during this time.
It's a great idea. I mean, we have to remember that, and I know you know this, we all know this, that from the large portion of this pandemic, we had the worst possible president in charge.
Absolutely.
Just the worst possible psychotic, sociopath, narcissist, freak. So it wasn't like we had a government that was like, hey, funding, here, cities, please take all the funding that you want for this very serious disease we have. No, we had like, it's going to be gone. It's going to be gone in a minute.
It's great. I'm great too.
I don't like masks, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Or your state doesn't like me, so I won't give you guys any money or vaccines or PPE. Like, what are you talking about?
That's quite accurate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't really like we had an atmosphere that was encouraging great ideas and out of the box thinking, but
there's a possibility of it. And one of the things I'm a little scared of is if we work really hard to just go back to the normal that was, because the normal that was didn't work well for everybody.
No, it didn't work well for most people.
Yeah. Now imagine if we could say, like you were saying, your friend is a seventh grade teacher and likes small groups. What if we said, hey, we want to get everyone back in school, but instead of getting everyone back in school into 30-person classrooms, what can there be 8 or 10-person classrooms? And maybe it's not for the full day. Maybe it's a part of your day as a cohort you work with. What if we say, wow, we actually made big strides in digital learning this year out of a place of crisis.
Mm-hmm.
How do we actually keep investing in that? How do we make sure every student in our system has a Chromebook or an iPad? I'm not saying that that's necessarily the idea, but we figured out these solutions in this year. Or in the last year, we said, okay, every family should have access to high-speed internet in the city because we're expecting them to do schooling at home.
Have to, yeah.
Shouldn't we have that outside of the pandemic?
Yes.
Shouldn't everyone in the city have high-speed internet?
Yes.
And so I really don't want to see our city go back to the normal that was before. I want us to say, we learned some things, let's do it better.
Yeah, no, as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Nothing should go back to the way it was before. I mean, it's like when you move to a new apartment, you know, you don't necessarily take all your old shit with you. I actually brought too much of my old shit to this apartment when we moved here. But, you know, that isn't a chance to like get rid of some of your stuff, decide you're going to do your kitchen differently, whatever. And the same should be true for the school district, the way we do, I don't know, everything, unemployment.
Everything, classroom size, like the teacher having 30 students to be in charge of and teach, that's a lot. I can't even think of 30 people I would feel the strength to talk to at a party, let alone, you know, have to individually work with them. Like, that is a lot for one person to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, a class of 30 kids. Good Lord.
I
mean,
I hope we come out of this appreciating what teachers have been doing, and not just teachers. You know, while many of us last spring, last summer, and into the fall were figuring out how hidden we could be, there are a lot of other folks who kept going to their jobs. And because they went to their jobs, we were able to stay in our homes, right? Their jobs.
For sure.
Movements. Like, let's treat essential workers as essential. Let's get schools the kind of the funding they need. Like, all of these things become clear.
Yeah.
And then, because you did bring up the arts, I keep thinking.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the theater that you were involved with, The Tank. I looked a little bit at that before we started, and then I ran out of time. But what about that?
What about The Tank? I mean, the lack of live performance has just been a hole in the heart of the city for the last year. Yeah. And I cannot wait to look at it's back. And I'm glad that the open culture, open streets sort of movement is going to start having more and more opportunity for outdoor performances.
Yeah.
But our city is so wound up in the performing arts. And you know it. As practitioners, as enjoyers. So for the last 18 years, I've been involved in the theater called The Tank. I'm one of the co-founders and the longtime board chair. It does new work by emerging artists across disciplines.
Okay, because we have some crossover Facebook friends. I'm an actor as well, and a stand-up comedian. So,
we do a lot of comedy there, theater, dance, music, mixed media, poetry, puppetry. But it's all based on the notion that live in-person performance is valuable. It creates a sense of connection, creates a sense of community, creates an experience you can't just get on the screen.
Yeah.
And obviously for right around a year now, The Tank has been closed down, as have theaters and venues.
Everything. Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. We did an event in October for the vice presidential debate. We showed it on a big screen at our local playground in Park Slope. Oh. And I invited a couple comedians I knew, one who lives in Bed-Stuy, actually, to come do a few minutes of political comedy beforehand. This was not an ideal setting. And as comedians, you know about not ideal settings, right? It was like dark and a little bit windy, and the microphone wasn't great, and people were sitting really far apart. So that makes it really hard to get a critical mass of laughter. Everyone's 6 feet apart, ready to watch the vice presidential debate. And we threw a few comedians up. The comedians were so thrilled and excited to be in front of an audience of any sort and do live. It was October, so first time they performed in 7 months. And the audience was grateful, was working really hard as an audience to be there, be present and enjoy, because they were just so grateful that someone was performing for them again. So I'm really excited for those experiences to come back to our city. The city's going to need to help the arts, but the city also is going to be helped by the arts as soon as we're able to do all of that.
True. Yeah, that needs a plan too. You know, I mean, I guess a plan's starting to emerge. But Quinn, you did some outdoor comedy, right? Yeah. I haven't done jack shit since March as far as comedy, but I'm getting ready for something really awesome very soon, I'm sure. Quinn, what was your experience of performing outdoors?
It was a lot better than performing for my cat. It was. Okay. I was going crazy.
Cats are terrible audiences.
I was so happy to perform outside. I didn't care that it was windy, that it rained a little bit. I was like, whatever, it's out here. Give me some boots. I'll walk out here and do it. It's a different vibe, but people are definitely, as you said, they're in a way starved for live entertainment. Like you feel it as a performer getting on stage, that people are just like, yeah, like, you know, what you got to say? And, you know, like, I didn't even get heckled. That's how happy people were.
All right, I'm going to do it then.
You didn't even get heckled.
If you promise people will be nice.
Real person.
Yeah, they were just like, give me more. Like, can you, and then like, you know, like, can you go 20 minutes? I was like, I've been alone for like 4 months. I can go an hour. Like, I was like, good.
Whoa, impressive. Yeah, that's going to be fun. Live performance is going to be fun. So are you still involved with the theater company, or I guess you're mostly?
I'm still the board chair. When my city council election, I'll step down from that. And we're prepared for it, but the Tank is doing great work there. I haven't been involved in the day-to-day programming in a long time. The two women who run it are doing a terrific job. And we've also been able to keep our staff employed.
I saw that in the article too. That amazed me.
It's been tremendous. And also we've been able to keep our venue. And this is really a unique experience. The Tank's story for the last 18 years is the story of so many small businesses and so many tenants, honestly. It's being buffeted around the city by terrible landlords. Mm-hmm. The landlord that tore down the space to build luxury condos, the landlord that wouldn't do repairs in our basement when there was a sewage eruption in the basement. Oh. So we're like, sorry, we're starving artists. We cannot perform stand-up comedy over a sewage eruption. But no. They wouldn't do repairs. We had to move.
So we have some standards.
Yeah.
We've had all the low, but some.
Some,
but they're there.
And now for the first time, we have a landlord who's able to sit with us and talk with us and say,
oh,
look, we can't perform. We're not going to pay full rents. But we also get that you are a landlord and you're still paying your mortgage, your utilities. Let's work it out. Mm-hmm. And we've been able, and we also said we'll be transparent with you. If we get loans and support and grants from the government, from the various agencies, let's work this out together. And so it has maintained that we still have our space. We're starting to use it again for live performances that we stream.
Oh,
and
cool.
Before long, we'll start being able to do small, in-person, distanced, masked, sanitized performances. But it has really been a reminder that this is only possible, the space is only possible because the landlord was willing to sit and negotiate with us. And so many landlords of theaters, of businesses, of tenants are not willing to have that conversation. And it's a key piece to making our city function is to give tenants, whether it's commercial or residential tenants, a little bit more standing and foothold in that process.
It's kind of mind-boggling to me that they wouldn't want to work with you. It's like, if you're a known entity and you've been a decent tenant or good tenant, why would you not want to just keep that person rather than just like, yeah, screw it, whoever. Like,
And who else are you going to get in there? And yet,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure whatever, you know, I think we've all saw the, New York Magazine had the piece of like the 500 venues we've said goodbye to in New York City.
Yes.
And it is heartbreaking. And I know folks who have restaurants and they said they tried to talk to the landlord and said, we're literally closed. We cannot pay rent, but we want to be here to open as soon as we can. And the landlord wouldn't negotiate with them and they got out. I think there are, so back to city council for a moment, I think city council needs to ask on a regular basis, what can we do through tax code, through regulation, through oversight to incentivize keeping a place full rather than there be a financial incentive to have it empty. If anything in our tax code is allowing you to make more from an empty space than a full space, that's a terrible disincentive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing that I know matters a lot to small businesses, matters a lot to arts groups, nonprofits. How do you tell people there is a benefit? And we get it instinctively. Of course there's a benefit to having space, but you walk down your main streets, you see plenty of empty spaces, and you think, how could this have come out differently?
And it's depressing. It's depressing to walk down the street and just sort of wonder like, oh, what happened to that business? What happened to them? Even before the pandemic, as you mentioned earlier. And so like, wait, what is the incentive for keeping your space empty for the landlord? What the hell is that?
Depending on the way you're structured, are you counting it as a loss against your taxes? And so you're getting write-offs on that. But like, where is the set of incentives to keep it full, basically? Or, mm-hmm. you know, there's ideas of something called like a vacancy tax. Would you penalize landlords for having a space vacant for too long? Vacancies happen, right? But like, you know, how does a vacancy tax work that then creates a proactive incentive to say, oh, I want to keep you here, or I want to work to make it happen? There's also been a long history of discussion around like, could, this is not for every tenant, but could landlords get a tax incentive for housing nonprofits? And that would help community groups and arts groups. And a lot of landlords, you know, depending on them, you know, like the idea of an art group. It actually like adds some life to their retail. It adds some life. It can be a very attractive thing.
Okay.
And then you also want to think about how in all of the rezoning and development around the city, how you're creating room for the arts and not just the high-end arts, but arts in a little democratic way that is affordable for the performers and presenters as well as for the audience.
Wow. Okay. So you're saying that landlords are people too. They're not just monsters.
Most landlords are people too.
They are. That's good. That's good to know. That's a good reminder.
That's like a weird t-shirt. Like Justin Krebs, most landlords are people too.
Most landlords. That's a great t-shirt.
You guys can put that up on your store. Mm-hmm.
I love that.
The profit can go to your shop.
I like it. That's very, very generous of you.
My mom and dad will each buy one.
I'll buy one. Are you kidding? I'll buy one. I love that this is about community health across the board, that education and the arts and then just regular old retail and all of that is really so important. I mean, you know, I have friends that are like, oh, it's so sad the Broadway theaters are closed. And of course it is. It's horribly sad. But they're not necessarily thinking all the way down the line, like, it's sad for the actors. It's sad for the wardrobe people. It's sad for the guy that runs the coffee truck. It's sad for the, you know, it's sad for the cafe down the street. It's sad for the people that sell that I don't know, that bring trash bags to the theater, like, whatever, everything.
Absolutely.
The ushers, everybody. Like,
yeah.
I don't even understand how we're surviving. Apparently, New York has more money than even I realized, because I would have thought we just would all fall in through the earth at this point. But apparently, we're going to make it. I don't know.
It's a good reminder. This is a city, even in an economic crisis, it's a city of great wealth, and it's a city of great abundance,
yeah,
and a city of great innovation and creativity. Now let's put all that to work.
Yeah.
Back to the old normal, but to actually say, how do we make this work for everybody? And for me, whether you're talking about small businesses in main streets or parks and open spaces and arts and culture, what you're really talking about is, how do we create the commons in our city? How do we create these spaces where people come together, where strangers become neighbors, become friends, where you see somebody who maybe you've seen them across the block a bunch, and now you share a smile, you learn each other's names. And that's what public schools do well, and it's what arts institutions do well, and it's what block associations do well. And that's the world that I want to live in. The pandemic was a huge blow against that, because suddenly we were all told, be scared, be distant, be masked.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, it was a reminder as much as ever how much we need it. And the highlights, the moments of strength and joy and connection over the last year have come because we've found ways of creating that social capital and that community connection in spite of a pandemic. And that's what we need to invest in all the recovery going forward.
Our commons. I love that you said that. That's great. Yeah. That's what the pandemic kind of smashed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they're still there, and the weather's going to get nicer. We're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back to the commons again.
Build back better, just like old Joe Biden said.
I've heard that one. I keep saying it.
It's actually kind of catchy. I like it. We should, for sure.
Absolutely.
And you know, one last fun note about this election. I don't know how many municipal candidates you're talking to, but it's the first ranked choice voting election.
I love ranked choice.
Yeah,
it's pretty exciting. So there are going to be six folks running to replace Brad in the June primary, and you know, you can list five of us, which is kind of interesting. Now, you could also list five candidates for mayor and comptroller and borough president. So you might have circled 20 boxes before you get to us. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't have any idea what it will look like, but it's such an interesting reminder that folks can learn about multiple candidates, can say, oh, I like this guy who works with Move On and works in the arts and works in schools, and I also like somebody else, and make us your first and second choice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really a lot of hope that it means that we're all the candidates are staying positive and friendly and engaged, and we're all really trying to represent some of the same interests and the same folks here.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm so excited about that. The right choice.
Too.
Yeah. Every vote counts even more than before.
Absolutely. Every vote and second place vote.
And third, the second vote, third.
One guy today who's like, do you think that they're going to have people walking around answering questions and explaining to you while you vote? Because this sounds very complicated. And I was like, probably not. He's like, I don't know. Is there like a timer? How fast do you have to do this? And I was like, wow, this is really stressing me out a lot.
Yes, there's a timer.
Exactly.
Definitely. That's the only thing they're clear about, is that there's going to be a timer. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Very fast voting. That's what Republicans want anyway. Vote as fast as possible with as few people as possible. Oh, and there's stairs also. Happy election day. Whatever. Okay. All right. Well, this was a great conversation.
It was. Thank you for being here, Justin.
I almost feel like relocating to Park Slope or Windsor Terrace, but I'm going to stay here in Sunnyside. But I'm going to encourage my friends in your area to vote for you, and we will definitely promote your campaign because you're representing all the things I want to happen in my district.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Folks can find out more at justin2021.org. They can email me at info@justin2021.org. I am willing to talk to, listen to, share with, learn from anyone. So
awesome.
Carolyn Quinn, I really appreciate you taking the time to go so deep, not only in local politics, but local politics is not even your district. That takes a lot of stamina.
Well, but it's our city, right? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
We've interviewed a few different local politicians that are running for various things, and each one has been fascinating, and I've learned stuff, and you know, it just makes me learn more and more why I should be involved in local politics and know more. You know, it's good.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Part of our mission statement is to inform people about how important their votes are, how all politics are local.
Yep.
That's what we want to do.
Terrific. I appreciate mm-hmm. you doing it.
Of course, thank you again for being here, Justin, and answering our questions. And
yeah.
Hopefully, I'm sure to see you again in the future.
Thanks to Ed Magel, who is one of your soon-to-be constituents. That's who suggested I interview you, by the way.
That's terrific. Well, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the show. Enjoy the rest of the week, the month. I don't know, wherever we are, and I'll see you down the way.
All right, cool. Thank you, Justin.
Definitely.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, that was swell.
Very informative.
Yeah. I love that he has a focus in both those things, live performance and education.
Because that's our jam. So
that's our jam and not, public space.
Not education, but.
Well, I'm in favor of education.
Well, I'm in favor of it. It's not like mine. I don't have any children.
You know. Ain't got no children. No.
Ain't got no kids. So.
Ain't got no kids neither. And my cat.
Not yet.
My cat is doing terribly at remote learning. I can't even get her to turn on the damn computer. She just sleeps all day. What else? Did we have anything else we wanted to say to each other?
I don't know.
You want to tell your story about your math teacher?
You keep talking.
I thought that was significant. Please tell it.
Okay, so. A lot of people who know me know this story. Okay, so when I was in seventh grade, I tell people that my first nemesis was my seventh grade math teacher, Mr. Nischick.
Say that name again.
Mr. Nischick.
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 Okay, got it.
At the time, he was probably like in his 60s when I was in seventh grade. So I don't know what he went on to, but you know, bless his heart. while he's burning in hell.
Oh my goodness.
He was a very unfair man. And when I first met him, it was like the first day of seventh grade. And he, you know, he came and he was like really like uptight. He always wore like a sweater vest and a bow tie.
Oh.
Tall, lean man. Very, very serious. And he came in and he was like, you know, my name is Mr. Nischick. And I'm like, okay. He's like, do you know what kind of name that is? And like, you know, we're all looking around like, no. And he was like, it's German. He was like, do you know what that means? And of course, I couldn't help it. I raised my hand and I say, that you're a Nazi? And I made a formidable foe in that moment. He hated me.
Did he?
But that's not my fault. That's not my fault that that's the reputation that Germany gave a seven-year-old.
No, he walked right into that. He opened that door.
I thought he did too. Like, what else? He said, his answer was like, no, it means that I don't take any crap and everything's going to be run smoothly. And I was thinking like, you know, well, as an adult, that still sounds like an Nazi to me.
I don't think that's the accepted definition of what is German. I mean, kind of. But
I think he was trying to scare us, which I think a math teacher trying to scare their students is just wrong in the first place.
Yeah.
And I hated the way he ran the class because your grades were whatever. Like, you know, you have tests, you do the assignments, you have a grade. But if you misbehave, like talk out of turn or anything like that, he would decrease the scores of your tests.
What?
So that, you know, if I would make 100 on a test from me, like, you know, not being able to shut my mouth because, you know, I was a big class clown, I would end up with a C or a B because he would keep like taking away from it. And that was a huge problem for me.
Yeah.
Because I've always had trouble keeping my mouth shut.
But so, no, you can't do that. You can't take
he
away
did.
Points for
he did.
Oh,
he
for
can take
Pete's
away
sake.
Points for misbehaving. So at the end of seventh grade year, my grades were like, I was on life support because of my behavior, not because of the work.
Yeah.
So at most I was like I was very far behind. And so he started saying that, you know, it might be if I didn't like, you know, do really well for the final test that I might need to do summer school. Now, I had never done summer school before. I have Black parents. That was not something that was going to happen.
Right.
I went to public school and summer school ain't free. So my parents made it very
not?
Clear to all
of
us kids.
Oh, I didn't know that. Summer school's not free?
Summer school, you have to pay. Parents had to pay. In Michigan, parents have to pay for summer school.
Oh, shite.
And
oh,
so
my
parents were very clear. We're not paying for you to go to summer school. You do the work when you're there.
Oh.
So at the end of the year, I try to make amends with him. I go up to him like one day after class, everybody leaves. And I'm like, you know, in all my seventh grade composure, I'm like, you know, Mr. Nishchik, I know we never really got along, but I hope you know that I can do the work and that you will not, you know, penalize me for, you know, for things that I've done. And he was at the desk and he like stood up and he was like, well, you know, Quentin, he was like, I appreciate you coming to me as a man and saying this to me. And I want you to know that I'll have no hard feelings against you. And I hope you won't have any against me while you're in summer school. And I looked at him and I was like, oh, you motherfucker. I was so, so mad at him. Yeah. I was like shaking. So I leave the class. So that was like a Friday. I swear, Friday. And I go home and I'm thinking like, oh my God, I'm going to have to go to summer school. I'm so scared. Yeah. So I like, you know, I'm wishing and hoping and praying. Like every time I think about it, I like start like wishing like, no, don't let me have to go to summer school. Don't let me have to go to summer school. And I'm like, it's like a mantra for me from Friday until the next Monday. Come to school the next Monday and there's a substitute. So I'm like, okay, whatever. So that day goes by. Tuesday, come back to school. We get informed that Mr. Nishchik has taken early retirement. That he is completely, he's not coming back for whatever reason. Mm. And that our substitute is going to be there for the final weeks leading up to the end of school. And because she didn't do what he did, I ended up passing without having to go to summer school with a B.
Good.
That is my story.
Goodness gracious, Mr. Nishchik. What's his name? Nunchuk?
Mr. Nishchik.
Nishchik. That is seriously asshole behavior. That is wrong.
It's a power of prayer. I also tell it as a power of prayer story because I feel like
true.
I prayed
well, no,
for
right.
something bad to happen to him anyway.
Okay. And we don't know what happened to him, really, right?
I never found out what happened to him. I never inquired.
I know what happened to him. He was discovered. Right. It was discovered that he was actually a guard at at Auschwitz. Somehow they found his ID card or whatever. He was exposed and was just sent right the heck out of this country over there to Germany to have a trial. That's what happened.
I hope so.
That's what it sounds like to me.
He was a despicable man. Yeah. And like I said, my first nemesis.
Horrible. I cannot believe he took points away from your good grades for your bad behavior. Now, and maybe your behavior wouldn't have been as bad if he hadn't have. It sounded like he was, you know, poking the possum, that expression we've used before. Like he was making you behave badly a little bit.
Maybe he was, but I didn't need a lot of.
I mean, you didn't need a lot of help, but
I didn't even. I was an incorrigible class clown. I was very, very right. frustrating, but I did my work, and so
yeah, it sounds like it.
You know, he was still giving me detention and everything. I feel like that should have been,
my punishment. Friend who's a math teacher is not like that, and you would have liked him. I'm sorry you had to have that Nazi-esque math teacher who we know got sent back to Germany and died in jail. That's what happened.
May he burn eternally.
Okay. I'm so glad I asked you to tell that story because that has more detail than you started with before we started recording.
I will never forget that story. That story, yeah. I will never forget it. It happened exactly as I told you. I still don't know why. I feel I was saved. God's hand was on my shoulder.
Uh-huh.
Keep my mother from having to meet him in person if I had been sent to summer school, because my mother would have killed me.
Yeah. See, my fear of summer school back then was just, I just felt like there was a shame element. And I also just wanted to run around in my bare feet and just run around all summer. I didn't want to go to school, you know.
Oh, not a barefoot summer story. I love when you regale these stories of running through the South like a female Huckleberry Finn.
That was me. Yeah, no, I didn't like school in the regular part of the year. I certainly wasn't going to tolerate it during summer. I was a bad student, different from you. I made okay grades because it was just easy, but I was not very focused, shall we say.
Figured I'd leave it on an inspirational note, you know.
Yeah.
Please pray. God may take out somebody for you too. So just,
I think that's great.
Won't he do it?
I love that won't story. He? I loved it. All right. Well, that's it then. The end of our show. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming to our show. No, and it was really great. And once again, I'll just say it again. It was great interviewing Justin, and I loved hearing about his really innovative ideas. Maybe now that we have a website, Facebook page, all that stuff, I'll put links to his articles, the ones about the school and the one about live performance. They were really good.
He does. And we're definitely going to post his campaign information on our Facebook. If you haven't checked out our new Facebook, please. This is going to be good. Like the page. We're going to post a lot of stuff and share a lot of stuff on his campaign and where you can reach him or support him if you choose to.
Mm-hmm.
Please do. That'll be it.
That's it.
That's it. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to support the show, please be sure to visit buymeacoffee.com/gonna be good. And if you want to join in on discussion about the episodes, follow us and comment on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook at This Is Gonna Be Good. And once again, I am Quentin Lamar. You can follow me on Twitter at Quentin Lamar.
And I'm Carol Scudder. I always have to look. I can never remember. I'm on Instagram. I'm at the Carol Dan. So it's confusing. See, how am I supposed to remember that? On Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then on Twitter, I'm at Carol Scudder. And yeah. Oh, and thanks, Peter D, for the great music that he did for our show and for his terrific editing.
Yes, he does a great job. And I want to remind you all to continue to listen and subscribe to us for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows. And thank you for supporting and listening to This Is Gonna Be Good.
Help us out,
y'all. You guys take care.
Bye.
Bye.